The Crude Life with host Jason Spiess.
All right, coming to you here from the Train ND Northwest break room. Actually, this is the conference room, my bad, the Oasis conference room. Jason Spiess, we've got Sean Wenko with the Williston Economic Development. Is it corporation? Is that what the word is at the end? Or what is the word at the end? The Williston Economic Development?
That's all we call it, Williston Economic Development Office.
I think I got tripped up on that before, too, because in Fargo, they always put the word corporation at the end.
Yep.
And so I always get tripped up. Anyway, here we are. And Sean Wenko, by the way, you've been here for how many years now?
So I'm going on 15 years going into 2023. So it's been a ride.
We're 10 years here on The Crude Life, and we're doing the decade of discussion. So you've got the decade and a half of discussion, but just over the last 10 years, primarily 15 years, what would you say the story of the Bakken is?
Well, you know, I think it's one of success and perseverance, if I had to say that. Because I've seen, you know, over the 15 years, we've seen the ups and downs. And if there's one thing we fight all the time in the Economic Development Office is the fact that when we're trying to get investment to the city, we always get looked at like, well, it's just an oil town. The town's going to bust. There's not going to be a lot of opportunity. I always point out 15 years later, you know, did we have some slowdowns? Absolutely. Did we keep moving forward? Absolutely. So it's just one of those things that we just kind of just keep moving the ball forward a little bit every, you know, here and there, and we just continue to grow.
One of the stories that we did in the first, actually, I think it was our first or our second story, and I believe it was our first story, but it was the Bakken is not an oil boom, it's a technology boom.
Yep.
And I still think that's true today, and even when I take a look at regulation, those regulations, they're trying to come at the oil industry. It's like super technology that they're coming at the oil industry. So I do look at this oil play as a technology boom. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, so different than when, you know, I was born and raised in Williston. Moved away in the 90s because there wasn't a lot of opportunity. But I look it back in the day of the late 70s, early 80s, and you're right. Such a different industry today than it was back in that period, but even such a different industry than it was 10, 12 years ago. And we always say that technology drives this thing. And as it gets better, the technology helps the industry. It reduces their costs. It increases their efficiencies. They can operate at a lower break-even point. And, you know, they're not so susceptible to these wild swings of what we're seeing in the prices out there with oil and gas.
So when I take a look at Williston as a town, a couple things pop into my head right away is the airport and the community center. So you've got this, you know, gorgeous community center, which, you know, really becomes a four-season workout center right in Williston, where we've got some brutal winters, because I come from the east side, and it's North Dakota's got some very well, they made a movie on it. It's called Fargo. Okay. it's cold, and so having an indoor pool and aerobics and water aerobics and all these different water park things is a huge boon for this side of the state. Talk to me a little bit about some of these quality of life economic development projects that are now done.
Well, that was a big thing when things really kicked off. Yeah. You talk about the rec center, and it's called, it's named the Ark because of the size of it and almost to simulate Noah's Ark a bit. But the rec center itself, I mean, again, the residents realize there has to be some sort of quality of life, again, so you sustain some of the ups and downs that you're seeing with our primary industry. And, you know, I want to say this goes back, I bet we might be about 12, 13 years now since the Ark was constructed. But it was funded through a 1 cent city sales tax that was voted on by the public, and portion of that sales tax went towards the development of this facility. And just like you said, it's got about everything that you can think of. And you wouldn't think you'd find a surf simulator in Williston, North Dakota, but you can go to the Ark and you can surf.
And then go rock climb.
Yep. And then hit the water park, or you can play basketball, you can lift weights, play tennis, you got an infield turf, about anything you want to do. So again, it's kind of an all-inclusive quality of life piece. So that was a huge addition for us.
Is that paid off yet, or?
You know, I could not tell you.
Okay. But it hasn't come back up to be like, oh, how are we going to pay for this? And the only reason I bring it up is because when the Fargo Dome was built, man, the doomsdayers, they said that was going to make the state go bankrupt. And looking back at it now, I think that was one of the best investments that Fargo made, actually, was
absolutely.
The dome.
I mean, absolutely.
And so, and they keep extending that tax that sunsets because they're like, what else can we do to it? And
yep.
And anyway, so the other one is the airport. Yeah. Talk to me about that, because I look at the airport more as a number one. There's a lot of traffic coming in and out of here, in and out of here. And this is not really a hub. You know, this is not right. Denver. This is not Minneapolis. So that tells me one thing, and I take a look at the airline records, what are coming and going, and they've been up yeah. this year. So I look at that as a positive. But the fact that you guys moved the airport, I mean, what are we talking about? Three other places in the nation?
Right.
St. George, right? Williston, and I forget the third.
And I know. We could talk Denver, I believe.
Denver was the other one? Okay.
Years, but.
And folks, just so you let you know that normally they do not allow cities to move airports. That is a big deal. So in order to do that, they have to really make sure that airport is worthy.
Yep.
It means that's going to get used, and it's not just a half-cock thing. So what is happening with that, either from the private aviation side, the UAS side? Yeah. Is the UAS stuff used out there or no?
So not at the moment, but there's okay. a lot of discussion of what could be out there with UAS. But, you know, on the airport itself, you're right. I mean, when we relocated Slolin Field, which is now XWA, that was the first relocation of an airport in more than 20 years that went to a new greenfield site. So that was a big, big deal. And then also the point that we had such demand at our airport, the amount of time that they got it done was in record time as well. So, and that's something you didn't hear of. When you build an airport out there, you're probably looking at 20 years from planning to acquisition yeah. of land and construction, things like that. And you know, we almost did that in just about half the time, just because it needed to be done. A big thing I point out is that, you know, it's XWA, it has the international status. So you look at a town the size of 31,000 people, and we have an international airport here where we can accept flights from outside the country. And what's unique is we're finding, and it's not advertised a lot, but we're finding that we're seeing a lot of celebrity traffic, believe it or not, where they're coming in from overseas. This is a perfect stop for them before they're on their way to the West Coast mm-hmm. To come into customs, and they're not really harassed by paparazzi or big crowds or anything like that. So we're finding quite a bit of stops happening at the XWA. But in terms of, you know, you look at the industry, this was something the industry wanted. You know, they needed access. Corporate needed access up here through the airport, and what we had currently just wasn't working. So that really helped with the vision of XWA. Now you look at today, I tell people that, you know, it's still going strong. You know, we've got United and Delta servicing out there. We added Sun Country, which is a direct flight to Phoenix. Sun Country is going to be adding another direct flight to, I'm sorry, Sun Country, a direct flight to Las Vegas. And then they're going to be adding a direct flight to Phoenix here coming in 2023. So it continues to grow. If you were to look at boardings at the airport, they're running just about 100% full. And I tell people it's not a problem. You know, when people say, well, there are more flights coming in, it's not a problem that the demand isn't there. It's the planes and the pilots on a nationwide scale that we're having the problem. So as soon as we can figure that out, when we talk about workforce, we're going to see more opportunities. But the airport from the start's been a success.
I didn't realize that there was a workforce issue with pilots and or flight attendants.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and you look at...
That's the one industry I keep seeing pilots like average. Hey, I'm getting my pilot's license. Like, it seems like I know more people getting their pilot's yeah. license now than ever.
I think what you're finding, again, I probably know just enough to be dangerous, but I think it's like anything else. You're finding this mass exodus of retirees now retiring. And what's coming in, even though it's a lot, is still not fulfilling what the need is on the exodus out there.
And yeah, then, I could see that.
You know, then again, supply chain. You know, we look at trying to find, you know, the industry or the airlines are, you know, trying to find planes. And it's not as simple as just pick a plane out of another market and here you've got a new run. So
does that airport have a private connection to it too?
It does. We do have an FBO out there. Okay. And it's called Overland Aviation. And again, that was again, working with XWA, Overland Aviation, they came in, they put a pretty significant investment to that area to the tune of about $10 million out okay. there. So, and they're seeing a ton of private traffic come through there.
Well, I would imagine so, too. Yeah, I mean, in Fargo, they've got the Fargo Jet Center right on the yep. on the north end of the airport as well. And, boy, it seems like, well, and I've discovered this over the past 10 years that a lot of these private jets, they're not expensive anymore. I mean, $60,000 for a private jet, right. that's what a Hummer costs, you know, a Humvee. Yep. So it's not out of line for people to have these anymore.
Well, and it's such a, you're right on there, because it's such a fun deal. I'll tell you, you know, kind of my secret with economic development is I get a good pulse at who's looking at the area by the jets that are sitting yes. on the tarmac out there. You know, I'll kind of keep my eye on there, because if you've got new industry or new companies looking at this area, it's almost a guarantee that corporate has been out here prior scouting.
I tell that to Kenley. Cranes, anytime you see a crane, really there's a job opportunity within a 3-block radius. Yep. Whether the guy with the crane's hiring or the people doing the construction, or get the hot dog cart up, because if there's a crane, there's a lot of people working there.
Yep.
What's going on? Kenley's got some, Kenley Nebaker of Train ND Northwest. We've had a couple interviews about they're bringing a crane in here. So is there some sort of job training, I guess, economic development behind major skyscraper construction in Williston? What's going on?
You know, some of the things we've seen, it wouldn't surprise me what got happening.
Didn't you guys have cranes in here not too long ago? Yeah.
We actually have cranes right out here. We do crane training, absolutely.
They do crane training here, so that's why I always joke about that. But what is happening here for workforce development yeah. and in conjunction with economic development? Because they can go different directions sometimes.
Yeah, you know, a couple things that we're seeing is I get this question a lot now, where we're seeing the price of crude that's out there. A lot of people say, well, you know, Williston's probably, you know, it's probably going crazy like it was in 2012. And I said, well, it's not necessarily the case. And I go, there's a couple things. I said, one, you know, we've put in the infrastructure to handle the influx of growth. So we're a little bit able to handle when we have these bumps in prices and the rise in activity. But two, you're looking at from the industry a couple challenges. The two challenges they're facing is, one is workforce. There's not a single company that I've talked to or worked with out there that doesn't say they need workers. So that continues to be an issue. And then two is capital. And a lot of that goes back to the current administration. You know, Wall Street is not real privy to invest a lot into the oil and gas industry right now, when the stroke of a pen or some sort of verbiage can come out that will hurt the bottom line of the industry. So those are kind of the two things that we still have a bit of a challenge to get up and running. But, you know, believe me, it's still going pretty gangbusters out here.
You mentioned the administration, so I wanted to ask a little bit about whether it be local politics, or whether it be national politics, or whether it be statewide politics. Politics is really starting to impact economic development and workforce development from a variety of different angles, whether it be from the old traditional pork packages coming out of the 80s and 90s and today, just like the hits from 102, or the new one, which is, hey, Joe Biden says, take some money to stay home and not work.
Right.
I mean, I think it was Joe Biden. That was who got blamed by the business owners that I talked to. Oh, they also said a word that I'd have to clean up a little bit to put on there. In fact, it wouldn't even be a sentence if I cleaned up the words. But politically speaking, it can impact your job. You know, it can.
Oh, yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that, because it's been quite a swing the last couple of years. And you mentioned how you guys have built this cushion a little bit, but at the same time, somebody's got to pay for that cushion too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the big thing for us, I mean, it's still the political climate. You look at North Dakota being a conservative state, and Western North Dakota, you know, being more conservative than the rest, you know, that tends to, you know, go a long ways, especially when you're dealing with the industry that we work with out here that makes this area grow for us. Now, you know, in economic development terms, again, we always promote ourselves that we look at with business startups, we're kind of there as the facilitator to help businesses get off the ground. From there, we take the approach where we step back and we just let the business grow itself. So, you know, we're not, and that can be confusing sometimes, I think. I think people see economic development, they think it's a big handout if we're doing incentives or this or that, or it's unfair, you know, of one business over the other. But again, we look at is that we work with anybody. At the end of the day, our success is seeing an entrepreneur grow. And I just go back to is we're there on that front end. We might help with a little assistance on the front. We might help with just even sitting down and help running some numbers. But we always step back, and it's up to the business to take it and run with it. So the successes you see out there, really, it's not necessarily economic development. We may have helped a little bit on the front end, but it's those business owners that have made that a success.
Are these grants or are these loans or these access to individuals? Or?
So a couple different things that we have out of our office is you'll see that we do everything from we'll partner with the Bank of North Dakota to do low interest loans. So if we have a business that is a startup out here or a business that is someone's buying a new business, we'll work with their lead lender. We'll work with the Bank of North Dakota, and then we will buy down the interest rate of a note up to a certain dollar amount. And a lot of it's based on size of the project and other factors, but we'll buy down that interest rate for them. That can be a straight out grant. And then we also will have some smaller grants that you'll see out there. So if there's maybe a business that wants to clean up their store facade or storefront, or there's a small coffee shop that doesn't need a bank loan, and but they're seeing some high cost to get started up, we will help with what we would call mini match grants out there. And then I know you had talked to the SBDC director, Keith Olson. That gets into kind of using our expertise a bit as well. It all starts with developing a business plan, sitting down, talking with us. We run with our software, we run tons of feasibility analysis for these companies out there. At the end of the day, we want them to be successful. We want to make sure we steer people in the right way. I mean, obviously, if someone's going to come in and into Williston and let's, for example, they want to spend their life saving starting a pool cleaning business, probably not the best mm-hmm. approach to take in there. So it's those sort of things. We want to ensure success. And you know, it's one thing we pride ourselves is that the businesses out here in Williston right now that have worked with SBDC and economic development, we have seen over the last 10 years probably less than a 1% failure rate.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that is including like getting them through COVID-19 when businesses were shut down and just kind of helping them get on the other end. So it's the knowledge that we hope to pass on and just ensure success for them.
Do you have demographics? I was talking to Keith Olson about that as well. And, you know, North Dakota traditionally being very Caucasian. And in fact, my high school, Fargo North High, we had one African American in our whole school.
Right.
And we called him Akeem just because his name was Jonathan. He ended up being the mayor of Moorhead, Jonathan Judd. Ended up being the mayor of Moorhead. That's not the name we grew up with. That's African American. Right. So we did. It is just awful now saying that. Now that I'm even thinking it and saying it out loud, I can't believe that we did that. But times change. Anyway, when I take a look at the demographics in North Dakota, they've changed considerably too, whether it be Watford City has a Mexican restaurant where I believe the whole menu's in Spanish.
Right.
I mean, that's next level. That's like going to Greeley, man. That's like different. That's all the Phoenix, you know, you start to see those things. Fargo, we've got 3 or 4 or 5 different Indian restaurants. Yep. And so you're starting to see that. What's the demographics look like out here?
That's the same thing. A huge melting pot now of what you're seeing in Williston and in West North Dakota. It's pretty similar to the Fargos and the Bismarcks. It's just comes to the people that have come to North Dakota for the opportunity. What's unique on the demographic side that I point out a lot is that, you know, if you go back to the 90s, there was real concern in Williston. It was a town of about 12,000 people. Population was stagnant. There was a real concern that the baby boomers were going to start to retire. who was going to come back and be the doctor, who was going to do the professional services, be the dentist out there or the attorneys out there. You look at today, the average age in Williston is right around 30, 31. We're seeing record number of births every year at our hospital. We've got a massive child care shortage. We just can't, no matter how much we build child care capacity, we can't keep up. And we're at capacity, or I shouldn't say we're at capacity, but we're seeing some challenges in our schools as well, just with the influx of kids that are in this area. So it's just a much younger community, a vibrant community, and you know, you're going to see these families are just coming in, and to me that shows stability for this market out here.
Are you seeing anything outside of oil and gas? A lot of people think of oil and gas right away as Williston is a boom bust town. And over the last 10, 15 years, I know there's been a lot of talk about trying to diversify the economy. I'm not sure how much more diverse you can get than paddlefish, but is Williston able to do that? Because sometimes just if your ground doesn't grow crops, you can't be in agriculture.
Yep.
Unless nowadays you can bring that agriculture indoors and do, you know, indoor vertical gardens and things. So what's the economy look like here, Mr. Business Developer?
Yeah, so a couple big things that have happened out here. You know, one of our larger projects that we worked on is working with Sanford Health. They are breaking ground on a $100 million clinic going into Williston with potential down the road, a potential hospital to be a part of that clinic. That is all part of their goal of moving west and really kind of cracking into the Montana market. So the intent of this clinic is a regional facility. So one, that's going to drive people not just from Williston, but from around the region. So what's that going to do? It's going to increase our restaurant and retail capacity here. We're going to see more of that happen. On the oil and gas side, what's been unique, and I say this is almost the boom 2.0, but what I mean, the second boom is that we're seeing these companies come in that are more, they're value-added companies that are looking at the byproduct of the oil and gas industry, finding a way to take that byproduct, create value out of it, and sell it to different markets or use it for different things.
What would be byproduct?
So, you know, one, let's talk the natural gas. We've got an abundance of that. You know, one of the biggest projects coming in is a Canadian-based firm named called Cerelon Industries. They're going to do phase one is a $2.8 billion gas-to-liquids facility where they're capturing the natural gas. One of the main products they hope to make off there is a low-grade jet fuel, which they will then sell to the other markets. And then there'll be other things that come down the line that mm-hmm. they'll work on that. But what's been unique is that's kind of set in motion a plethora of things that are going to happen because one works off the other. So I mentioned Cerelon. Well, you know, what happens is, well, what does Cerelon has as their byproduct that can be used? Well, let's say, you know, produced water, for example. Well, now we have a company in here that says, well, I could take that produced water. I could strip some of the byproduct off that and make value. And what do they find in there? They find hydrochloric acid, caustic soda. Potentially they see high concentrate of lithium, which mm-hmm. eventually they'd like to get down and strip some of the lithium off it. So now you've got this, you know, this water company that's doing that. Well, then they're creating hydrochloric acid. Then we've got a battery manufacturer that's saying, well, I need a lot of hydrochloric acid. So we're working a lot with the state of North Dakota on these value-added projects out here. I can tell you there's probably $10 billion worth of projects that are looking at this area. Now, you know, not all $10 billion is going to happen, but even if half happened, that's $5 billion that we would see in other industry out here.
These sound like jobs too, though.
They are jobs. I mean,
sometimes you can do a $10 billion project and it's all robots.
Right, correct.
You know, and so once the construction money is done, that's it. But these actually sound like you need people there doing things. You know,
right.
You need chemists at some point, and you need, okay.
And I mean, they're going to be good jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you had mentioned, they're going to be good jobs. And the fact is, too, I mean, the abundance of natural gas, it's not going away. And that feedstock for these type of industries is going to be just great for them.
Chevron just made an investment into Colorado, and they became the second largest operator in Colorado just last week. And a friend of mine called me, and he asked me, you know, what I thought about it, because Colorado's been in the news for going, you know, a different direction. They're going more blue with the governor there and banning a lot of the oil and gas activity like California and New York. And I just explained to him, I said, at the end of the day, Grand Junction in that western side of the state has so much natural gas that the Bureau of Land Management put their headquarters there. Yep. So it ain't going anywhere, man. I go, right. There's Chevron knows that. And there's certain industries that, or there's certain natural gas products that just can't go anywhere for the next 100 years, 50 years. And I tell this to a lot of people that are anti-fossil fuel. Coal, hey, listen, we all agree that we need to find a new direction for coal, and it's probably going to save our freshwater supply. And until then, it does great for energy production, and they're the first ones making all the changes. They're getting cleaner every day to where they're going to filter our water. Oil, 90-some% of the oil that we find in the ocean just leaches right out of the ground. Should we just let it keep leaching out of the ground, or should we maybe collect it and save it from the animals? Same thing with natural gas. If we don't capture that stuff, it's just going to leak in the air. So I don't think a lot of people understand a lot of that.
No, and I think that's one thing I always try to stand up for our industry a bit on there is exactly what you said. It's not, I mean, I think opponents look at that, at the oil and gas industry, and you're right, they want to say, well, it's a dirty industry and they don't care about the environment. And I don't think that could be further from the truth. I mean, I look out there and what these companies are trying to do to get to net zero, you know, carbon footprint, and it's in their best interest to do it as well. So if you really looked at some of the things they're trying to do to, you know, find uses for the natural gas and reduce their footprint on the environment, I mean, it's they're working hard to do that. So they're really moving towards the green movement as well. It's just unfortunate. I think some people just don't want to recognize that.
We pride ourselves on being a non-political platform, but you know, we do get a little bit snarky at times. And in 2017, I want to say it was, when we were speaking at a conference in Gillette and a few others, and we've been basically saying the same message that if you go back 150 to 175 years, we've been decarbonizing as a planet, from wood and hay to whales to coal to oil to natural gas. We've gone from the wood and hay, which is just ridiculous amounts of carbon, down to one molecule. I mean, right. Natural gas is pretty good.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the last 20, 30 years, the Sierra Club and the NRDC and Al Gore jump on this movement that's already been happening. And I argue they're slowing it down. They're slowing down the innovation by doing a lot of this, because this innovation was happening. We could probably have super solar panels by now if they allowed it. We could have wind turbines that actually work. I'm not a wind fan. I'm not a wind fan. There's no reclamation program. I like birds and bees and bats, and they've decimated the golden eagle population in the Southwest, and that's a whole different topic for a different day. But I like the Amish windmill. What I say is the Amish are more advanced than we are today with wind energy, because in a weekend, them and their neighbors can put up a wind turbine, essentially a windmill, and get water and power a pole barn in a weekend, and they're done.
Yeah.
That's pretty good energy output. And back, we haven't even figured out how to reclaim our wind towers yet, so I don't know what your stance is on that. Your economic development, so you got to be neutral on those types of things. But is there any wind development out here?
You know, we've got a couple projects that are looking in and
it's
around the
area. It's not a loaded
area,
question or anything like that. Hey, go ahead and jump in this alligator pit. What's going on there? No, but
no, we do have a couple projects that are looking out in this area for wind development. And I think the state always looks at the all-inclusive energy plan as well.
Yeah, no, and like I said, there's a place for it. I just think that if we went a smaller scale on the wind, it would be more beneficial, because it works. It's worked. Right. It's worked since the dawn of man. I mean, getting water and power up is very important. But all right, so let's talk about economic development. What is it you guys are looking for? Is it memberships? Are you guys state funded? Talk about how somebody can engage and that sort of thing.
Sure. So actually, with our office here, we're a department within the city of Williston.
Okay.
So we actually answer to the city administrator, and then we answer to the city commission as well. Our funding, you know, our you know, our, I guess our operating funding will come out of the general fund with the city of Williston.
Sure.
Where we utilize some of our incentive funding is we have a 1 cent city sales tax out there called the Star Fund. With that sales tax, 3/4 of the penny goes into what we call infrastructure debt relief. So it's when the city's going in, it's got to redo a street or curb gutter or sidewalk or something like that. They try to offset some of the costs, so it's not fully put back on the shoulders of the property tax holder there. So mm-hmm. they try to do it with 3/4 of that penny. The other quarter of that penny goes into what we call the jobs creation fund. So again, what we had talked about, that's where we will use that funding for the low interest loan programs, straight out grant programs, and kind of things like that.
So it's not a membership based, like I was thinking of, like a chamber. They're a membership based type of an organization.
So. Yeah, we're not. About the only thing that we do is that would maybe be close to membership is that with all of the events that we hold throughout the year, we fund those through sponsorships. So it's always important, our sponsors. You know, if we don't have the sponsors, we can't be doing the business after hours or awards banquets and stuff like that. So that's about the only thing you see that we do the outreach to the public on.
So if somebody needs assistance, it's much like Keith Olson with the Small Business Development Center. Is it free of charge? Or?
It is. So our services are free.
That's where I was going with this. Like, because the chamber, I believe you have to be a member to get their services, right?
Yep.
Yep. Okay.
No, our services are free. And the big thing, you know, with talking, when you had talked with Keith with the Small Business Development Center, we've created a pretty unique partnership. And when I mentioned about our low failure rate, that really is a result of SBDC, because any application that comes through the Star Fund for funding, it first has to go through SBDC.
Oh, second pair of eyes.
And yes, so you know, we want to make sure that the business plan has been put together and it's a good solid idea that's gonna be successful. So our partnership between Keith and I has been great.
No, that's a good point to point. Second pair of eyes is always nice because they can always see things that other people can't see. You know, and no, Kenley, I'm serious. In Germany, you know, they went all in with wind, right? Well, 70% of their insect population went down in places where the wind turbines went up. And in the Southwest, they're almost extinct now, the golden eagles. So, see, I get on a soapbox occasionally. Oh, one final question. Mm-hmm. ESG, has that made it down to your path yet, that environmental, social, governance side of things? The only reason I bring it up is because you're mentioning funding quite a bit. And it's all driven by... funding now. So has that ESG term made it into your office yet by memo or anything like that? I'm sure you've heard of it, but in terms of your day-to-day, have you been directed in any certain way?
No, we have not dealt with it as of yet.
Heard anything from any of the businesses or anything like that?
Okay. No, just hasn't been something that's been on the radar just at now.
Okay.
You know, who knows what will happen down the road.
But. Well, no, I'm just asking people because the fall, which is right now, is when the SEC is scheduled to put out their ESG rules.
Okay.
And that's going to probably send a shockwave through a lot of different retirement accounts first, because it's a lot of these JP Morgans and Morningstars and BlackRock is the other one that are kind of having the kerfuffle going. So, all right. So, and then trends, any sort of trends or anything like that you want to make people aware of who might be looking at Williston as a place to open a business?
Well, I think, again, we go back to one thing we didn't talk about was emerging technology here in the area. And one of the biggest opportunities that I am seeing in economic development, this goes back a couple of years ago, the state of North Dakota put just roughly about $28 million into a project called Vantus. And Vantus, what it is, it's a statewide radio network that will allow UAS, unmanned aerial systems, drones, to run beyond visual line of sight. And the intent was this Vantus eventually will run from east to west across the state, and eventually the entire state will have access to Vantus. And it's really a cutting-edge deal now when you look at the growth of drones in the drone industry across the world that You know, right now people can operate drones, but they've got to have some sort of chase vehicle behind them. They have to keep them in sight. This will allow them to test their capabilities beyond the visual line of sight. So we're fortunate enough when Vantis went in, the first leg of that network went in between Williston and Watford. And we are seeing now a tremendous amount of interest from some of these companies. We actually are working with a company called Infinity Development Partners, and a lot of people might be familiar with their name because they are the lead on Grand Sky and Grand Forks. And they are working to kind of identify where our niche and fit is here, is in where our niche is in Western North Dakota. You know, I'm quick to point out that, you know, we're not trying to be Grand Forks. And you know, the way it's emerging, we're not going to be defense-based systems. We're not going to be large-scale UAS. We're going to be more monitoring systems, probably testing small package delivery, easement monitoring, helping emergency services, things like that is where we see we fit with our rural nature over here. So, and you know, you're talking to Kenley, we're working with Kenley. He's got a great program that I'm sure he'll talk about with TrainND, with training in UAS systems. And so this whole thing is really gaining a lot of momentum, and it's going to be a neat emerging market for us.
Vantis? Is that a state company, public-private partnership, or what would that be? Is that a private company?
Public-private partnership between the state and Talus.
Public-private partnership. Okay, so it's a public-private partnership. Is this something where you mentioned for somebody using a drone, they wouldn't have to have a lead or be there? Right. So they'll be able to go into this network, and from there, just like the military at that point, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, eventually, I mean, you're going to be able to fly it on the network when the system gets up statewide.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll be able to put it up in Williston. You could fly it to Fargo without any sort of chase vehicle behind you. So, and really, again,
that's
I go back to
deal.
where this is big is these companies, this is a new industry and everybody's testing their technology. Mm-hmm. So to have that ability to say, hey, go to North Dakota, you can get on the Vantis system to do that. This is cutting edge for the state of North Dakota.
Oh, it's huge. I've been covering drones since 2006. And in fact, I got reprimanded for doing an interview in 2009 with a guy who got back from Israel, and they had drones the size of honeybees back in 2009.
Yeah.
And so I was filling in for one of the afternoon radio shows, and I got reprimanded for it was too science fiction-y for North Dakota. And I'm going, do you guys have any idea what's happening in the UAS sector? Yeah. I mean, we're one of six test states. And so, you know, and Doug Goring and I used to do interviews annually about drones that would go over your crops. And if it spotted, you know, potato blight, then it would send out a little four-wheeler to perfume mist. And the amount of money that it would be saved on pesticides and the amount of efficiency with crop production is there. And, you know, probably 3 years ago, we were, you know, 4 years, actually 6 years ago. Oh, boy, COVID, that's right. 6 years ago, we were about real time, you know. And so I imagine this Vantis is that kind of that next chapter to make a lot of this really happen. And do you still need a pilot's license to do a commercial? Do you know? Is that?
You need your Part 107.
Part 107, okay.
Not Part 61 any longer, Part 107.
Used to be like you had to be basically like you got to fly a Pan Am or something like that. You had to be a full-on pilot, you know. So.
Ended in 2017, and now you have
2017? Okay, all right, so that's that, all right.
I keep looking over at Kenley. You know who's got the training program here, you know.
Well, I'm not up to snuff as I used to be on a lot of this UAS stuff. In the early days, I was all in, so I knew a lot about these different technologies and the emerging part. And I wanted to ask about the public-private partnership that is put together, then that's going to allow, you know, businesses like mine or yours or his or hers to utilize that, correct? That's
right.
The idea.
That is
there'll
the
be
idea
some,
behind it.
I imagine there'll be a checklist or you'll have to go through something at that point. And
yep.
Will this be a network then like a Verizon network, or will this be like the public bus system?
Well, you know, I'm going to look at Kenley again. I mean, it's really a series of kind of radio towers and frequencies
It's shared public infrastructure, right?
Would you get a bill from the city or from Vantis?
You get a bill from Vantis.
Okay, so it'd be like Verizon then. But well, because the whole people probably don't understand this. The reason we have an FCC is public television is because NBC was built by the taxpayers. You know, it's, NBC just happened to have the machinery to put what was on the air. You know, a lot of this broadband stuff was built by the taxpayers, a lot of this internet that we have. And so that's, again, where public-private partnerships do work. Otherwise, we wouldn't have any of these things, you know. And so, okay, so that's great. And when's that looking at going online, do we know, in the next few years?
Well, the Williston to Watford is, if it's not online now, it's up and running right now.
Oh, tomorrow.
And I know there was some discussion. I think there was some discussion the next phase would actually happen on the eastern part of the state. And
well, they might be doing that tomorrow with the Grand Farm little kickoff to do they're doing in Castleton.
They're still a little ways out on that.
But no, that's tomorrow.
No, I'm saying on the next phase of
I see.
Yeah, the next phase Vantis will be coming, but it will be on that eastern side of the state.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that's Well, that's so you got the UAS industry kind of going out here, and another not to go after Obama. I swear I'm not trying to do that, but when he was in office, he did sign an executive order that allowed, like, I think it was 20,000 drones by 2020, and we're a little behind on that because of COVID, but we're going to start seeing a lot of drones in the sky in the next year or two, because that infrastructure legislatively, that's already done. So
I tell people I look at this UAS industry, and eventually it's going to be, I mean, you're going to look up one day and you're going to see them all over.
Yeah.
And they're going to be just an everyday part of our lives, whether it be delivery, you know, monitoring systems, like I said, for, you know, pipeline or easements or things like that. They're just going to be all over doing their job, and it'll be something that we'll live with.
I'm really curious to know what the Army just bought, like 8,000 of them the size of my palm for. They're like the size of my little palm, and I'm going, why did they just buy all those? I still get up to dates on all these different things because the drone industry, you mentioned out here, I actually think energy monitoring is where the Western North Dakota is going to come out of the UAS, because you've got everything out here from oil and gas to, you know, traditional. I think, is you guys still doing hydro over at Garrison too, or is that the spillway? Anyway, I'll edit that out about the Garrison part because I don't even know. The Garrison Dam.
Yeah.
That's hydro, right?
Yeah, we got
that's a hydro dam, right? Yeah, okay. I'm so far removed from that project. It wasn't a fishing dam, I know that. That was Ed Schaefer's big project. Well, anything else that we should know about trends or any other kind of areas you're starting to see upticks that people should be aware of? I think that airport makes the UAS marriage complete, to be honest, you know. And
there'll be you know, once we identify what the opportunities are, I think that airport's going to play a big role. And you know, when the airport was built, again, it was built with the vision of you know, over the next 50, 75 years, what sort of industry or growth you may see. So there's opportunity and there's space out there for UAS, you know, systems. Just figuring out how that integrates, how that works with FAA, that's stuff that we'll have to continue to work on.
Well, sir, thank you much. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to...
No, again, I mean, we're just seeing a lot of opportunity here in Western North Dakota. It's not slowing down. I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon. And, you know, we always talk about diversification. And if you look at it, you're seeing it. We talked about value add. We talked about these emerging industries with UAS. We talked about regional healthcare coming into the market. It's all here and it's happening.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Interested in becoming a sponsor? Email studio@thecrudelife.com.